Morning, everyone. I didn't realize there's so much light here. Wait. I don't know with you, but well, I'm here because I'm in love with Rizal. I have read his two novels like 4 times for the last 4 years. I taught Rizal 3 years ago, and it was the only time I was able to appreciate him as a hero and as an artist. Being next to the Rizal monument does not make one any closer to him. The closest I can get to a living Rizal is through his novels Noli Mi Tangere and El Filibusterismo, the two novels for which his life was made to amount to. Great literature, no matter what language it was written, regardless of the milieu it was set, will speak of the same truths. Truths that will always be found and will never be lost, even in countless translations. While this paper does not attempt to prove further the universality and timelessness of these two novels, this paper intends to show only how these two landmark novels strike a familiar chord side by side to contemporary works of literature written from a different culture, by a writer writing in a different language. As cancer is to Noli, as white blindness is to Jose Saramago, as armed revolution is to El Fili, as blank votes rebellion is to Saramago's seeing. Ladies and gentlemen, Jose Rizal and Jose Saramago. Separated by 61 years, one was from the Philippines, the other was from Portugal. While Rizal was born to a family of considerably rich landowners, Saramago was born to a family of landless peasants. Rizal went to the best schools and studied the arts and sciences. Saramago was too poor to finish grammar school. He went to a technical school to learn to be a car mechanic. In 1992, Saramago came in conflict with the Catholic Church when the former published the novel, The Gospel According to Jesus Christ, which depicts Jesus as a fallible human being, capable of sins, who fell in love with the beautiful Mary Magdalene. As a consequence, the Portuguese government ordered the removal of the book at the European Literary Prize under the pretext that the book was offensive to the Catholics. As a protest, Saramago left Portugal and went and moved to Spain. Rizal, on the other hand, well, you know the story. In the world of literature, diseases are often used to represent dysfunctional societies. An internet definition describes disease as any disturbance or anomaly in the normal functioning of the body that probably has a specific cause and identifiable symptoms. Diseases are one of the factors threatening us from having a properly functional life. Now, throughout history, epidemics have caused extinction of whole populations. Over the last century, man has discovered many microorganisms that cause diseases in humans and animals, and has learned how to protect himself from them by either prevention or treatment. Now, if that definition is applied to characterize social malady, it would be any disturbance or anomaly in the normal functioning of society that probably has specific cause and identifiable symptoms. And social afflictions are one of the factors threatening us from having a properly functional society. And throughout history, social injustice, political tyranny, and religious abuses have caused extinction of whole populations. And over the last century, man has discovered various factors and agents that cause society's degeneration and decadence. and has learned how to protect himself from them by either prevention, rebellion, or purgation, but never indifference. Published in 1887, Noli Me Tangre opens the floodgates where the stifled cry of the natives found relief. It is the canvas of the 19th century Philippines during the last years of Spanish colonization. It is peopled with characters whose colorful stories range from painful to mysterious, from romantic to bizarre. And as Saramago, in his 1998 Nobel Prize lecture, he said, "It was with such men and women risen from the ground, real people first, figures of fiction later." There are the old women and men who tally divine indulgences for tickets to heaven. Then there are the men in skirts who make thriving businesses out of their religion. A son who lost his father and a mother who lost her sons. Men and women who lost their lives. Some even lost their minds. There are the rich and the educated, the poor and the marginalized. There are foreigners acting like natives and natives wanting only what is foreign. It is an era where textbook injustice takes form. It is where the voice of in the pulpit is also the voice of the of power. The government only the glorified slave of his master. Where religious infallibility reigns, Manila should have been the seat of Catholicism. This is the society's canvas in Noli Me Tangre. The picture is wicked, misshapen, and offensive. One easily recognizes the anomaly and disturbance in the daily grind of human lives. The specific cause is colonization of this once peaceful and promising trade hub in the southeast. The symptoms glare like the noonday sun. The rich get richer, the poor not only get poorer, some of them die even before finding out what is worse than being poor and an Indio at the same time. Still, both the rich and the poor, the educated and the unlettered, are puppets on a string. One bows one's head to the tiniest flick of a stick or suffer equality with the dead. Elias, the foil of the central character Ibarra, raises his accursed fate back to the roots of the latter in a revelation orchestrated so masterfully, untangling layers and loops of gothic subplots. The story of Elias puts to shame primetime television, if you've read that. Chapters. Now both Ibarra and Elias find themselves afflicted with cancer that slowly eats away hope and faith, dignity having been the first to go. To cure this social cancer, Ibarra advocates education. Elias, on the other hand, calls for struggle. Each thinks of the same end, but their means are worlds apart. And further metaphor will render the first preferring to learn to be a doctor to cure and prevent future cancers, regardless that the weight may kill those already afflicted. The second one wants to cut the part with gangrene, and which is most cancerous, so the disease will not spread throughout the body, never mind that the rusty knife may also kill. Both Ibarra and Elias are pushed to the fore of their messianic impulses. To whom the disease had clung like a parasite to survive, to take the life of the host for its own, who would not have chosen to self-medicate. Now Ibarra returns in the guise of Simon, as you know, in El Filibusterismo, as the jeweler Simon. And he turns to the same island 13 years after his escape, and then before him are the same vile and greed. But because the corpse will not turn against its oppressor, Simon incited even greater greed. He encouraged crime and cruelty to accustom the people to the thought of death. Extremis malis extrema remedia, that is to say, desperate diseases must have desperate remedies. Desperate times call for desperate measures. Then again, Simon finds himself another foil in the person of Basilio, the altar boy. Basilio is a phoenix who rises from the ashes of, his childhood's misfortune. And he performs well as a student, and he expects to graduate and then to become a doctor and then get married. Great life. However, dreams, even the simple ones, will wither and die in a field that has been eaten bare by parasites. And then tragedy comes to Basilio, one after the other. The phoenix in him fails him this time. He looked like as if he had risen from the dead, horrified by what he had seen on the other side of eternity. So he listens to Simon's description of his own Sodom and Gomorrah. But then Basilio returns to his senses, and then realizing that only God can try such methods, because God is the only one who can destroy, because he also can create, and that God has eternity in his hands, but we don't. Now, for the second time, as you know, Simon's plan fails, and curiously so, both because of love. The first one failed when Maria Clara dies. It's the same day when he planned the revolt. In the end, everything is left to God. In the voice of the Filipino priest, Father Florentino, the rebellion fails regardless of its reasons, because Simon chose a means of which God could not approve. And Simon dies alone, save for Father Florentino, who prays over his dead body. The plans of rebellion are thrown into the sea and will emerge only when God wills it. It is at crucial and hopeless times such as this when Filipinos look up, let go, and let God. Social cancer has become so malignant, only a miracle can heal it. Curiously, I just thought about it. There's a little of Decameron in Noli Me Tangere and El Filibusterismo with the way Catholicism is portrayed. Written by Italian Giovanni Boccaccio in the 1350s, Decameron is a collection of 100 tales told by people who fled from the city ravaged by a plague. And one of the tales is about a Jew who converted to Christianity when he's made witness to the greed, corruption, and debauchery of the Pope and his clergy in Rome. The Jew reasons that if, despite the malevolence in Rome, Christianity stands strong, it must really be God behind it. Now, in Noli and El Fili, Rizal exposes Catholicism in its ugliest form. On one hand, readers encounter priests lying, stealing property, lusting for young ladies, impregnating women, corrupting government officials, and turning religious indulgences into business ventures. On the other hand, he presents the most honorable and loyal people in the characters of the other priests, and in the quiet faith of some of the pious men and women, making it debatable if indeed the medium is the message. Spain sent Catholicism to conquer this nation, we were told in high school and grade school. Now, the messengers of faith held hostage the faithful with the sweet promises of heaven and the stern warnings of hell. In keeping with the general religious sentiments, Rizal ends his two novels with religious metaphors. Consciously or otherwise, the first one concludes with two messiahs, but one giving one to the other, like John the Baptist and Jesus Christ. Narinig ko lang po yung kanina about Rizal being seen as the Messiah, Jesus Christ. The second novel closes with reluctance, as the Messiah fails to save his rotten, sick society, leaves fate to the hands of the Father. Now, reading Saramago, this is the second Jose, the 1998 Nobel Prize for Literature awardee, is like eating crickets and snake meat. It is an acquired taste, I asked my friend from the Philippine Normal University College of English and Literature, I asked him, kilala ba sa Jose Saramago dito? Okay, Yoli, tough luck, hindi. Anyway, reading Saramago is that you have to have the acquired taste and you have to enjoy reading the yellow pages. Saramago's novels are written using kilometric paragraphs with long sentences, 1,000 commas, and 0 quotation marks. That is Saramago's. One has to read through to locate the context, then and only then will the reader realize who speaks to whom and who says what. But one should not be discouraged by Saramago's seemingly claustrophobic writing style. Once a reader gets past that wall, he or she will be rewarded by a creative output that seeks out its own logic. That although his stories are hypothetical, one does not only willingly suspend disbelief, one is made to view common things in a totally different perspective, defining in high definition color the perception of the familiar. And if you're a literature major, you know it as Ostranini. Blindness is a modern parable on man's deepest fear of losing everything he possesses, including dignity and humanity. In his interview for the Paris Review in 1998, Saramago said, "This is a blindness that permits us without any conflict to send a craft to Mars to examine rock formations on that planet while at the same time allowing millions of human beings to starve on this planet. Either we are blind or we are mad." What if one fine day, while we are all going about our business, some going to work, others to school, some going to the mall, others attending an international conference like this, when without warning or preamble, without rhyme or reason, every one of us just goes blind. In the novel, an epidemic of blindness of unknown cause spreads throughout the city. It was a blindness of a different nature that made eyes to simply stop seeing. Well, the first blind man, accompanied by his wife, goes to the doctor, and then eventually the doctor too goes blind, so do the others in the clinic. Now the group of blind people is composed of the girl with the dark glasses, the boy with the squint, the old man with the black eye patch, all without a name, only descriptions. To keep the epidemic at bay, the authorities confine the first to go blind in an empty mental asylum. In this asylum, only one person retains her sight, the doctor's wife. As more and more people get infected, chaos breaks loose. Violence erupts, leaving dead bodies to be buried with only a spade to dig the graves. And as the situation worsens, the blind shed off dignity, defecating just anywhere, eating anything that looks like food. These people used to be decent folks before blindness strikes and turns them into animals of the lowest order. It was like the Lord of the Rings adult version. Then, as mysteriously as the white blindness fell, so it is lifted. Blindness is a modern parable, too raw, too crude. It can compete with the style and text of the Old Testament. It is about humanity stripped of television. It is about humanity in the worst state of undress. But equally, it is about humanity at its most magnificent, shining in darkness. Handpicked by circumstances, the doctor's wife becomes the accident hero who heals, guides, and saves the weak and the powerless. The novel presents a world of pure rottenness, a world that is alive only because of the sun that still shines and the moon that still casts off shadows at night. Some critics call Saramago the master of what-if literature. He presents the horrific consequences if all the world goes blind. However, in the case of this particular work of fiction, everything else in the novel reflects what the world has already witnessed in the course of history, except that in the world outside literature, people have eyes to see. With everyone's eyes open, a government can do what it pleases. A man can take advantage of another man's weakness. An entire race was marked and burned to extinction. Blindness is a metaphor for a society that has gone blind with indifference. The great colonizers have long retreated to their own shores. A black president has been voted to lead the most powerful country in the world. A poor boy from the province of former Indios has conquered the world with his fists and has been invited to meet the black president in the White House. Si Manny Pacquiao po iyon. Yet, stories of man against man and man against society do not change their course. Motivations remain the same. Accidental messiahs are still induced out of circumstantial wombs. The second novel of Saramago is Seeing, the sequel to Blindness. Question: what if during the last elections, only 3 out of 10 voters cast their votes, and the rest left the ballots blank? That is the question asked in the novel Seeing. How would a government react to a majority of its people who refuse to elect someone? A people have gone tired of bubble bath promises. What would the government do to its people who have gone out to vote but voted for no one? Seeing is a political commentary on a government that stands in the way of its true calling of being a system established by the people and for the people. A government that sees itself as the owner of power over those it governs. Moreover, it criticizes the most vital tool of democracy, which is the right of suffrage. In the story, the president who has been elected to a 5-year term is portrayed as a fence sitter whose task is reduced to cutting ribbons and social functions. The prime minister, whom the president appointed to lead and head his council of ministers, is the one running the show, shamefully declaring himself the captain of the republic. The prime minister orders the bombing of the underground train station, killing people and causing injuries to hundreds and destroying countless properties. All this to induce terrorism among the people who refuse to admit to have cast the blank votes. The prime minister does all this with false regrets, claiming the president's blessing, invoking the principle that, and I quote, "He who wills the ends wills the means." It is a sad state of affairs that one votes for a candidate who promises to represent the voters' ideals during the campaigns, only to be substituted by scheming friends and appointees when he wins. I'm talking about the novel. Drawing people's attention to the parallelism between the blindness epidemic of 4 years ago to the current blind casting of blank votes is the government's desperate move to solve the present crisis. So the government encourages the people to remember the nightmare of blindness, and then one person comes out and accuses the woman who did not go blind to be the same person behind the vote conspiracy, the blank vote conspiracy. And so this woman who didn't go blind was hunted down. And so the next day, fed by the government, almost all newspapers carry the group's photograph on their front page. The doctor's wife is identified as the person behind the blank vote conspiracy. Media, as depicted here, derives pleasure in adding petrol to the bonfire. Now, needing to save the woman from danger, the superintendent writes a letter divulging that the woman has just been used as a scapegoat. He sends the letter to one of the newspapers that did not carry the news about the woman. The following day, the newspaper publishes the superintendent's letter. However, at mid-morning, all copies of the newspaper are recalled. Still, the superintendent finds hope, but a man comes up behind him and shoots him in the head. At about the same time, the doctor's wife goes over the window and looks towards the horizon. 2 gunshots ring, and she falls to the ground dead. A novel ending with 2 major characters dead before the sharp sign begs the question why. Why the doctor's wife? Why the superintendent? Why Simon? Why Elias? Why do they die? Why do they have to die? The Jesus asked the writer. Now, reading the novel Seeing makes a good insight into the recesses of the collective consciousness of a people clamoring silently for change. When there is fear in the heart of the majority, a hero is called upon to turn the silent anguish into a resounding voice of hope. A battalion of soldiers turning against its commander will not cut it. One voice saying no over the blaring sound of yeses has proven the strongest to trample the most powerful. Furthermore, reading this novel side by side, the concept of Rizal and everything this man has represented through history, one sees that the work breeds life. An incident the day the superintendent is shot dead in the park makes an interesting parallelism to the life of Rizal and the circumstances surrounding the doctor's. Surrounding his having written Noli Me Tangere and El Filibusterismo. And I quote, "There is clearly something strange happening in the city. Men and women are handing out small sheets of paper that people stop to read and then immediately stuff into a pocket. It's a photocopy of the article from the impounded newspaper, the one which, between the lines, tells the true story of the last 5 days. The city has taken the matter into its own hands and set hundreds of photocopies working, and now there are animated groups of boys and girls slipping sheets of paper into mailboxes or delivering them to people's doors. Someone asks if they're advertising something, and they say, yes, sir, it's the very best of advertisements." Although the superintendent was exposed to the life of the government is dead, the ills of the government, rather, the truth does not disappear with his death. He leaves a testament to awaken the people out of a trance and take actions to heal this strain of social cancer. In the same breath, Rizal leaves a legacy written with his blood, which Filipinos wear like an emblem in their battle against tyranny, whether old or new, then or now. Saramago and Rizal agree that heroes do not have to live forever. There will always be people to carry the torch and bring their own brand of heroism. The four works of literature by Rizal and Saramago that have just been presented today indicate man's belief in humanity. Corruption and greed as social diseases may consume society, but there will always be a place in the heart of mankind that will remain nameless and incorruptible. And as long as that is alive, passed on from one generation to the next, societies will stand, even if social ills multiply and cling to the skin like fossils on the earth. Man will live to find a cure. Thank you.